This is actually quite mad because I was meant to be saving the second episode for a guest, and I've locked in some great shows, but I feel like I just, basically this morning I had a workout and I went to a local park and I did some like lat pull-ups and stuff, and I really like doing that while the gyms are closed. And I go quite early as well with the friends. It's quite like a nice, it's a nice feeling. And when it's hot as well, it feels good. But I was working out and I was like, you know, I had quite a lot of messages yesterday after dropping my first episode. And a lot of people asked me some questions like, like what can I do to be an ally? And like, what can I do more of to help people with mental health issues? And what can I do more of as a friend? And I think my friend's suffering. And then I had messages from people saying like, I think I've got the same thing, but I don't know how to talk about it or identify it. So I feel like I need to kind of do that some justice now and actually kind of go into some detail about what I've been through. I'm going to kind of call this episode 1.5. And I think what I'm going to do moving forward is create like a 0.5 episode if needed for any particular episodes that need me to kind of dissect afterwards. I think that's the plan. So I think this is going to be episode 1.5, just to create a little bit more substance and a bit more of a background about what I've been through, because I feel I had so many, I'm very obviously overwhelmed with the support that I've received yesterday. I wasn't actually expecting it on that kind of level. But I had a lot of very particular questions, and I feel like if I can just do like a 0.5 video before I start introducing guests to the podcast series, then actually I can provide a lot more clarity to people that are asking me these questions. So I'm going to just jump straight in. Let me have a quick sip of water because I'm doing this in one take, remember? Oh, ice cold. So to kind of give you some context, I'm 26 years old, living in Brighton, southeast of England. Great place to live. Love it. Love living in Brighton. But anyway, my anxiety stemmed back from childhood. I went to a very posh private school in my early years. It was a disgusting place. I hated it. It was strict. We had to like salute the headmaster, salute with a hat, like, good morning, sir. Good afternoon, sir. And that kind of fucked me up, I'm not going to lie. It was an all-boys school as well at the time. And I'll be honest with you, most of my friends who came out of that school, we've all got like a few things. Like, yeah, none of us came out completely okay. There was definitely a correlation between us and that school. It was rough. Couldn't cry. Used to get shouted at for crying. We were playing full contact rugby at like 5-6 years old. We couldn't do high fives. Like that was like hooliganism, quote unquote. If you were talking in a class, you would have to stand up and like face the wall, like with your head against the wall. Like it was very fucking backwards. And that fucked me up. I started having like panic attacks at night, but at the time didn't know what it was. So me and my family just assumed it was, well, I went to a child psychiatrist because of it. Let me just kind of break this down. So it was about, I must have been 6 or 7, and I used to have really bad nightmares, and I would wake up in a panic, right? And I would like try and jump out my window or try and run down the stairs and run out the house. I didn't really know what to do with myself. It was really tough. And I remember my mum taking me to a psychiatrist, like a child psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist just diagnosed me with night terrors. But really that to me is, I understand what that means, but really I was having bad nightmares because I hated school so much, and I was waking up in a panic because the nightmares obviously feel uncomfortable in your body. So I'd wake up and panic and I wouldn't know how to control it, because that's what I was going through at the time. I didn't know then, but I know now looking back. But that was my first experience. But I didn't really think about that experience again until I was much older. But it was always there. As I grew up, I had a good life. I had a good family, like very supportive parents, like just good people around me. I ended up leaving that school because I told my mum how much I hated it, and she took me out and she understood. Like I just opened up to her about how I was treated, and I went to an amazing school after that, like, and my whole life changed. But yeah, so cut to 2010. I just started my GCSEs. I was 16 years old. I was in a good place. Like, things were good, but then I got robbed at knife point. And, that was pretty frightening, to be honest with you. That kind of fucked me up because, well, at the time when I first got robbed, I thought I was about to get raped. Like, quote unquote, I remember like walking up the road with this guy. He had his arm around me and his knife to my side. And he was like, shut your fucking mouth. Like, if you try and do anything, I'll fucking kill you. And I was like, okay. And he's walking me up the road. And I was 16. This guy was about 28, maybe a bit younger. I don't know. But I was like, this is it. He's going to take me into an alley and I'm going to get raped. This is what's going to happen. That came first before getting robbed. But yeah, I got robbed. And then that kind of fucked me up. I couldn't really go outside for ages. I did touch upon that on the last episode. But what's mad, right, is this. So police, went to the police station for like 4 or 5 hours. Fuck all happened, you know, like nothing really happened. They had CCTV, but they didn't have enough, you know. And then lost all my shit, had to buy it all again. And then went back to school. And like, I didn't tell my teachers. I didn't tell the school. The police didn't tell the school. It wasn't like, listen, he's just been through this. So let's kind of give him a little bit of a, you know, it just didn't happen. I didn't tell anyone at school. I just my mates knew, that was it. But I was suffering in silence and I developed this panic disorder, but I didn't know at the time, but I just became very fearful of the nighttime and like people in hoods. I was always like scared of people in hoods. I was just like, oh, that person might rob me. Like that person might follow me. I was very paranoid suddenly, which is kind of understandable, but it is what it is. I was 16 years old. But the point is, like, GCSEs, like, I came out of some fucking sick grades. I had, like, 7 A's, 3 B's, and, like, 4 C's or whatever. It was pretty good, like, pretty good results, to be honest with you. Like, I'm very, very proud of myself for that. But really, I should have told my school and said, listen, I've just been robbed and my mental health is going to be on the low side. And the police should have probably told my school and said, yeah, one of your students, Josh, you know, he's been robbed. And it was quite a traumatizing experience. So just so you're aware, no one fucking knew. But anyway, that's one situation. That was January 2010. Did my GCSEs that spring/summer. And then things were great. I was going off to college. I was very excited. And then bang, September 2010, just turned 17. Week later, got robbed again, but next to my house. And that time I fucked up. I was done. That was a massive shock for my system. Started to have these really bad panic attacks when it got dark. And at the time I was at college and I was finishing at like 4:30. And honestly, like, because it was winter, I was scared. I was scared, like walking back from college at 4:30 in the afternoon. That's how fucked up I was. I would meet girls and, you know, they would be like, oh, do you want to walk me home? And I just couldn't do it. I had to sit there to girls and say, no, I can't walk you home, sorry. And at the time that was quite a difficult... That was difficult. That was really hard. I started getting counselling through my college for PTSD because they thought I had post-traumatic stress disorder, which in theory I did, but really I was developing an anxiety disorder. But my counsellor didn't really pick up on it for the first like 2 or 3 months. But anyway, what was happening through this time was I was really like losing control. I stopped enjoying life. I stopped being able to do much. College felt like a dangerous environment. I just had a lot of struggles at that time. And I wasn't enjoying it compared to school. I really missed my old friends and I missed the school vibe as well because I really enjoyed my secondary school years. But anyway, so then it got to Christmas time. So, you know, if we're looking on the timeline, I got robbed the second time in September. Then, you know, 2-3 months later, it's December. Breaking up for Christmas, it's all good. Everything's fine. And then bang. Panic attack at night. Woke up and it's like hot sweat and I was like, fucking hell, what's going on? And I'm like dripping, I'm like shaking, I'm like, fucking hell, this isn't right. And I'm out my window and I'm like gasping for air. And at the time I smoked a lot of cigarettes and I still do smoke now, I'm not gonna lie, but I smoked a lot of cigarettes and I was obviously drinking alcohol and stuff. I was a 17 year old boy, so that was, you know, the norm. We were going out and getting pissed and stuff, you know, British culture, etc. Anyway, at the time, I was like, okay, cool. Maybe like I smoke too much and this is the problem. I've got to be careful. It's my body giving me a sign, you know? It's telling me to slow down. So I kind of calmed down and I was like, I'm going to cut down smoking. So I went to sleep fine. But anyway, this would happen like 3 or 4 more times. And I would always have the same conversation with myself. And then Christmas Eve, I went out, had a few drinks, smoked, came home, got into bed, go to sleep, 4 a.m. or 3 a.m., wake up. So it's like Christmas morning. And it's the worst one. I'm literally like grabbing my chest and like, oh my fucking God, I'm dying. I think I'm dying. I think my body is shutting down. Am I having a heart attack? Like my body doesn't feel right. I don't know. I feel this horrible feeling. I can hear this ring in my ears. Like what's going on with me? I'm out the window. I'm sort of in tears at this point. I'm literally like crying. I'm like, I think I'm fucking dying. Like what's happening to me? Like, please someone tell me what's happening to me. I didn't wake up my family. I just suffered in silence for about an hour trying to calm down. I'm then in the bathroom. I'm putting water on my face. I'm just like, fuck, I need to calm down. I need to calm down. I don't know how to deal with this. And luckily, I just kind of went to sleep. I put Harry Potter on because that was my go-to back then, you know. Philosopher's Stone, easy. Put it on, just like immerse yourself and drift off. And I managed to drift off and wake up and it's Christmas Day. It's all good. Oh, you know, it's a nice day today. It's all sunny. This is great. I feel fine. As the day went on, fuck me. I didn't know. I couldn't stop thinking about the previous night. I couldn't stop thinking about what was happening to me. And I still felt uneasy. My body felt a little bit uneasy. I didn't feel good. But I didn't tell anyone in my house. So I suffered in silence all day. I sat there. And if you looked at me, you would have seen the sadness in my eyes. I wasn't really in the room. Like, there's photos of me from Christmas Day and you can see it in my eyes. I'm literally just like, it's like I've seen a ghost behind the camera. I'm just not really paying attention to life and the present. I was very out the loop. And what this happens to people that might want to ask this question, what happens after a panic attack is that you use up a lot of adrenaline. The blood is moving from all different parts of your body to prepare you for a fight or flight scenario. And it is very draining on the system. So that adrenaline that moves around your body is it's quite a physical activity going on. So the next day you normally, those who have panic attacks normally face two things called derealization and depersonalization. And it's almost like a lightheadedness. It almost feels like you're not quite living. Like you feel quite high and you don't really feel like you're in control. That is completely down to the fact that a panic attack does shake you and shock your system. So naturally, you are going to feel that way after. So that's just a kind of, just thought I'd touch upon that quickly. But yeah, I was going through this on Christmas Day and everything was fine. But as the day was going on, I just wasn't there. And I just had the worst day. I could not stop thinking about it. Started playing games and like watching films with my fam. And it was all good and stuff. And honestly, I just wasn't in the room. I just didn't feel right. I was anticipating the next episode of what was going to happen to me. And I was like, I'm about to have another heart attack tonight. I can feel it coming. But really, I was ready to have a panic attack. But at the time, I didn't realise. Anyway, so that was kind of that. I was watching a film with my family and I just didn't feel right. Something wasn't right with me. And then I got into bed that night and I put on Harry Potter again. I was like, yeah, I'll put on Harry Potter and I'll watch Chamber of Secrets tonight. That's fine. And then bang, I was panicking. I hadn't even gone to sleep. I put my head in the pillow and I just started to like feel it. And I was like crying to my mum. I was like, mum, I think I'm dying. Like, please help me. Please, we have to call an ambulance, please. And she calmed me down. She was like, I think you're okay. Like, what's wrong? But I was so hot. Like, my temperature, I was sweating. I was dripping. And my sister was there and she didn't know what to do. And I was like, it's all my fault. Like, I'm dying. I've been smoking too much. This is my problem. And I was in tears. I was just like, I don't know what to do with myself. Didn't tell my mates though. Didn't tell my mates. That was just not the thing to say at the time. She managed to kind of soothe me to sleep. Like she was kind of like stroking my head and I kind of like with a flannel and I kind of calmed down, ended up going to sleep with the TV on and I woke up the next day. And so this is a really emotional part of it. Cause I remember like how alone I felt in the world. I didn't know what to do with myself. That Boxing Day, I woke up and it was a beautiful day and I didn't have the nerve to tell any of my mates. I didn't know what to do because I thought it was my health and I was like, this is it. It's because I've been smoking and drinking too much. All they're going to say to me is, you're a fucking idiot. Stop smoking, stop drinking. And that day I went to walk down the beach, like just to get out the house. And honestly, like I remember that walk. I remember it now to this day. That walk was fucking horrible. It was this beautiful day. People were smiling like the old, oh, hello, Merry Christmas. You know, it's a Boxing Day. I live in Hove. It's quite a white area. It's quite posh. Like, it's just like, you know, it's just a very posh vibe. But honestly, like, yeah, I just didn't, I wasn't there. I wasn't in the right mindset. And, but what I can confirm is that I didn't have another panic attack in that Christmas period. It happened and I was starting to try and just be positive and push forward. I didn't really know how. I was just kind of fucking blagging it, to be honest. Like, it was a fluke how I got through that Christmas period. Then on New Year's Eve, I went out to a party, didn't smoke. And then I had a cigarette because I got a bit pissed and I felt fine, but I was always worrying. I was like, I think I'm dying. Like, this is a big problem for me. But luckily I got through that and that was good because I was expecting to die. I was expecting to like drop dead at that party. I was like, what's going to happen is I'm going to get there and I'm going to die straight away. I have one cigarette and I'm just on the floor. But that didn't happen. Quick sip of water. Hold on. Oh, fuck yeah. Sorry. That's good. But yeah, anyway, so how long have I been talking for? 13 minutes. Oh, 16 minutes. 16 minutes. Fuck me. Okay, I've got to be quick. Okay, so that happened. That was a shock. Didn't know what to do with myself. I was fucked. January back at college was like, fuckery. Didn't know what to do with myself. I was like, okay, things aren't good. And then my friend was like, oh, all the stuff you're describing, it does sound like something called anxiety. My brother suffers of that quite a lot. And I Googled it and I almost cried my eyes out because I'd realized that I'd finally found what was wrong with me. And it gave me that kind of peace of mind. Went back to my counsellor and I was like, hey, I don't think it's PTSD that I've got. I think I've got anxiety. And she was like, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. And we talked through it and it was great. Like, she was a great counsellor, but she was just teaching me like breathing exercises and the whole thing of like feeling your feet on the ground to feel in the present and feel like kind of analyse your body, like do a body check. Basically like a form of meditation, which is great, but there was much more to uncover than breathing exercises, which I think are great skills, but in my opinion, mindfulness and like physical exercise is great, but also having therapy is just as important. It's a balance. I like to describe it, I've said this before, but like, it's like someone who's trying to lose weight by exercising but still eating shit, or vice versa. Eating really well, but just not exercising. You kind of need that balance. Like, yes, you can get away with like losing weight without exercising and just eating well, but it's a slower and longer process. So I like to say the same thing when it comes to mental health sort of treatment. Mindfulness is amazing. It's an amazing tool. But I also feel like you need to look at the other areas as well, which are like the deep-rooted problems as to why you feel this way. But anyway, so she was helping with that, which was great. And then I spent like a year and a half just not ever looking into it much. I just kind of got on with things. And then a year and a half later, I hit a brick wall again and I was fucked. Honestly, I was finishing college. I didn't really know what I was going to do in my life. And I just woke up and panicked one day. And I had one of the worst panic attacks of my life. And I went downstairs and I'm like on my sofa trying to sleep. And I can't close my eyes. I close my eyes and suddenly I just can't stop worrying and thinking. And I just fall into that pit again. And my heart starts racing again. And I'm just like, what do I do with myself? I don't know what to do. Like, what's wrong with me? Like, am I okay? Am I actually dying this time? Like, but I know it's anxiety, but I'm still feeling this way. Is it always going to be there? Can I cure it? Can I not cure it? I thought I was cured. Like, these things were in my head and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And that was probably the darkest like 2 months of my life, because for 2 months, that was the lingering feeling. I like to describe it as a dark cloud that was just hovering over my fucking head and it wouldn't go. There was no gap in the clouds. It was just this dark, dark cloud. It was pretty nasty looking back. But just before I continue, something which was really good, which I noted, was as soon as I knew I had anxiety back at the January 2011, moving forward with my life, I was very open about it with people. And that was a huge thing. I remember speaking to random mates like, I've got this thing called anxiety, you know? Like, I'm not dying. I've just got this anxiety disorder. It's really interesting. Let me tell you about what it is. And I'll tell my mates. And then some of my mates were like, oh, I get that at night sometimes, but I thought it was just like my heart. And I was like, okay, well, we'll check it out. Like, go to the doctors maybe and like check out the heart. But, you know, maybe you're just worrying. Like, you've been worried recently. And they were like, yeah, well, I don't know what to do in my life. And then my other friends would have it. And suddenly, like, these conversations would flow. And I became the anxiety guy because in my group at the time, I was the only person that was like properly honest about it. And that's not even like an egotistical show off thing, because it's not really, but that's just what happened. It was just one of those things. So that was really interesting at the time. But yeah, then skip to this second point where I had this really bad breakdown. This is in 2012, which I've just been talking about, where I had 2 months of like dread. That was a disgusting time. I started getting therapy again, which was great. But I pretty much thought I was cured for that year and a half before that point. Because I was like, oh, I know it's anxiety, so it's fine. It's not going to happen again. And then bang, it happens. And then from that, I developed like a swallowing disorder where I couldn't swallow food because I was in a restaurant when I was anxious for my mum's birthday and I nearly choked on a piece of like bacon fat. And I remember like, it was fine. I wasn't choking, but I could feel it in my throat as I swallowed and I panicked and I tried to bring it up and then everyone was looking at me and I was fucking shaking and I couldn't deal with it. And even to this day, like, that's still a problem for me. Like, chewing food is a massive problem. I used to be the fastest eater. Now I'm the fucking slowest eater. Like, I will take ages. I'm better than I used to be. It's taken 10 years, do you know what I mean? So I'm much better now. But even to this day, if I feel like I'm going to choke, I suddenly get this hot flush of panic flow through me, like, straight away. And it does happen more often than I think still. So, yeah, it's still there. But anyway, that's a bit of a tangent. Let me go back. 2012, 2 months of dread. Didn't know what to do with myself, tried to read new books, tried to like get into new things, but it was still lingering. I was still pretty fucked until my mates were like, yeah, we're going to go on holiday to Zante, which for those who don't know is like the place to go when you're 18 years old to get really drunk and meet loads of girls and boys. And like, I don't know, it's just one of those places that you go, like, just it's in Greece and that's what you do. But they were like, we're going to go Zante, we've got a spot. Do you want to take so-and-so's spot? And I was like, fuck yeah, let's go. Even though I didn't really want to go, but I was like, maybe I should go because I've been suffering for 2 months. I feel like I need a bit of fun. Quick sip of water. Hold on. So, yeah, went to Zante and that was a fucking dread. Remember the day before I was going to sleep and I was like, what the fuck am I doing? This is the worst thing you could possibly do. You were in... You have the worst anxiety right now. You can't stop panicking. You can't think about anything else. Yet you're about to go on a lad's holiday with 15 people and get on a shitty airline. I mean, the airline doesn't even exist anymore. I mean, that plane, you know, one of them planes where you walk on through the fucking back? Honestly, you couldn't make this shit up. Because I get to the airport, right? Everyone's like, yeah, let's go, Spoons, get a few beers in. I was fucking shitting myself. If I could look back at myself now, I must have looked so scared because I'm just sitting in the airport like, oh my God, what am I doing? And I just remember literally in Spoons just like, no, I think I'm just going to have some water, please, guys. And we get on the plane and it's like some fucking wooden plane. And you walk on through the back and I was just like, oh my fucking Christ. And everyone's like an 18-year-old on this plane. And honestly, I was just like, this is the worst mistake ever. And then one of my mates was like joking about the plane crashing. And I'm like, oh my God, don't do this. And I'm just sitting on this seat, shitting myself. I'm like holding the chair for dear life, closing my eyes like, if I die today, please make it quick. And, but yeah, got in the air, it was fine. And then, I mean, because when you go through like weird anxiety, every single thing becomes an issue. Like, I had this inner ear problem, like the eustachian tube, like a tube in the ear where it got blocked. And it was blocked at the time that I was getting on this plane. And in my head, I was like, what if I get in the air and my ear explodes? Like, that was literally what was going through my mind. Because when you're in an anxious mindset, every single thing is a hurdle and it's scary as fuck. So, yeah, basically that was a big fear for me. And, yeah, that really kind of fucked me up. But yeah, I got on the plane and I was fine. Everything was great. We landed. It was fine. We got on a coach and then I was on the coach and I was like, I bet the coach is going to crash, isn't it? Because it's just my luck. Just my luck. I think the word luck resonated with me over the years because when I got mugged, people were like, yeah, you're really unlucky to get mugged. Like, really unlucky, man. You got mugged in Hove. Like, it's a nice area. Then I got mugged twice and people were like, yo, you're really fucking unlucky. You got mugged twice. And basically, I think I kind of started to feel like maybe I'm just the unlucky person and I'm always going to get bad luck. And that's why I think my anxiety disorder actually started. But we'll get there. What's the time? 25 minutes. Fuck. Okay, so where was I? Yeah, so basically, right. Quick sip of water again because I started laughing. Right, so we're in Zante, had a great week, like fantastic week. That changes, like, to be fair, the first night wasn't ideal. I mean, I got fucking paralytic, walked home to the hotel through some back street, nearly got robbed. And then, which was a dumb thing to do, didn't call my mum the whole first day. And then woke up and threw up for the first 6 hours. So, I mean, it wasn't that great, but I tell you what, it was a fucking dangerous adventure. And that kind of pushed me out of my comfort zone straight away. Like, looking back, I kind of needed that night, you know? Obviously, it was a horrible night, but I needed that first night. I needed to be pushed out of my comfort zone and survive the other end. Do you see what I'm saying? And that holiday got, you know, that was rough. I got jumped on the beach that holiday by two massive guys. Like, yeah, they tried to rock me on the beach. And but that doesn't, I don't even think about that anymore. Because at the time, that change of scenery and that kind of going out of your comfort zone really helped me. I'm not suggesting go on a holiday and get fucked up with your mates. That's not what I'm trying to say here. But the change of scenery, it felt so... The point I'm trying to make, what I described to you before was how fucking terrified I was of going on this holiday, but then actually getting there. And I went through that week and I came back like, I'm so fucking thankful that I went on that holiday. So yeah, all in all, it was a great experience. I came back and I started to feel more refreshed. I went to a new college for my third year of college and it was fucking amazing. I was doing music and I was like, wow, I love doing music. Like, this is sick. I just do this 3 days a week. Like, it's great. Things started to get better. I started to kind of train myself to feel better about walking around at night because I was having more and more new experiences with new people and stuff. And, you know, like sex was a thing, like I was meeting more girls and I started to feel more confident in myself and things were just, I was coming out of my shell a lot more. I really liked that period of time. This is like 2012, end of 2012, going into like 2013. Then I went to uni in Bristol in 2013 and I did music and it was a great experience, but also I still suffered a lot of my mental health and I had a lot of bad experiences in Bristol with my mental health and people didn't get it. I felt very trapped, very isolated. I would go to A&E loads. I would panic about my body. I would feel things in my body going wrong and I would be like, oh, I think I'm having a heart attack or oh, I think I'm having an aneurysm or oh, I think I've got a blood clot, like my arm doesn't feel right. And I'll call NHS Direct every time and tell them what's wrong. And they would always tell me to come down to the local hospital, like the outpatients ward or whatever. And I used to do it, like, I'll be honest with you, it was like twice a week I would do that. I'm not proud of it, obviously, because I didn't want to waste the NHS's time. But at the same time, I genuinely thought I was dying. I wasn't taking the piss. But people at uni, right, hear this, people at uni would fucking mock me for it. Like, I would come back and, like, there'll be a flat in my building and they would, like, talk about it to everyone else in their gathering or their party. And one time, someone even made a fucking Facebook status saying, oh, Josh has done it again. He's gone to hospital, lol. Thinks he's dying again, lol. And that kind of fucked me up massively. And then I dropped out of Bristol, dropped out of uni one day. I was so miserable. I was so depressed. I was so anxious. I used to panic so much that one day I said to all my friends in halls, oh, guys, I'm leaving now. I can't do this anymore. I'm sorry. Moved out all my stuff. It was a Saturday, right? Moved out all my stuff, drove home, woke up Sunday and was like, what the fuck have I done? And I went back for Monday with all my stuff. And the whole rest of that first year, I was seen as the attention seeker and the freak, to be honest with you. That's what people saw me as. And that was a really unhealthy time because I was so lonely and depressed that hate to say it live in case my fucking mum hears this, but that's when sex became like a thing for me of coping with my problems. And Tinder had just come out. And like back then, Tinder, when it first came out, there was no like minimum radius and there was no fucking algorithm. So like you didn't have to like go through like, oh, if you swipe a little bit here and swipe a bit there, you get this. None of that shit. It was just like, straight up Tinder, and it was very easy to use. And I could set the radius to like 300 meters in halls. You know, it was a great time if that was what you're into. But yeah, I kind of used sex to cope, and it just made me feel fucking worse. I'll tell you that right now. Quick sip. But yeah, it made it much worse. And I didn't really know what to do with myself. It was pretty fucked up. But yeah, it's a shame really, because, you know, I guess I had a bit of a fuckboy, quote unquote fuckboy reputation, but looking back, I was never doing it to like, I was never doing it in that kind of way. I was so lonely. I craved intimacy and like female company. That's all I wanted. I didn't want to hurt anyone. I just wanted to feel something. Like it was, it's sad. It's a really sad time. But anyway, so yeah, I stayed in Bristol for like another year. Things definitely got better. I started I made like a lot of new friends who became better friends for me as well. And like actually understood my problems. And also I started to feel better about nighttime. Because I had no fucking money. I was a student. So I lived in an area called Filton in Bristol, and I had to walk everywhere because I didn't have the money for a fucking taxi. And the taxis in Bristol at the time, this was just before Uber, there wasn't a lot of trust with the local firms. But I don't know. That's just my take on it. There's probably some amazing Bristol firms, but I never had much luck with any of the taxi drivers. I used to get like overcharged quite a lot. But I had to walk everywhere, and that was fucking terrifying. But you know what? That taught me a lesson. I started to really expose myself. That sounded weird, but yeah, expose myself to the nighttime elements. And then I dropped out of Bristol and I started having therapy back in Brighton. I was doing CBT therapy, which is cognitive behavioral therapy. And that was private. That was pricey as fuck, to be fair, but it was worth it. It was like £50 to £100. That's the kind of average that you'll be paying for therapy per hour. But my therapist taught me to go stand like outside like Odeon Cinema, for example, and go at nighttime when it's dark and stand there for 15 minutes. It's safe because there's people coming and going, but it's still in the dark and it's outside away from your house. Do it for 15, then do it for 30, then do it for 45, and then start walking to places and then go further and further each time at night. Start to do all these things. And honestly, those exposure techniques fucking changed my life forever. So it took me 5 years to kind of get over that nighttime fear. And now walking around at night, it's just another thing that I do. I don't care. I'm not afraid. Obviously, there's still dangers out there, but I feel like I can very much hold my own now. And then, you know, to explore that a little bit further quickly, I don't need to do it too much, but I've lived in Brixton for about 10 months, recently moved back to Brighton, but living in Brixton was quite different to living in Brighton and Bristol. It was a lot more busy. There seemed like there was a lot more kind of like stuff going on all the time. I don't necessarily mean crime, but I mean, it was just a very like busy area. And even living in Brixton was a fine experience for me. I didn't have any problem walking around. And I think my sort of 2014/15 self would never have been able to do that at the time. So it's taken a long time to kind of get to that point. Maybe I'm also older now and I sort of go to the gym. I take my body quite seriously. I take working out quite seriously. And there's different elements, I guess. But anyway, tangent, quick sip of water. As you can hear, I need it. Just chatting shit into a mic for like 40 minutes is tough. 33 actually. But yeah, so the point is, again, I hope people understand why I'm doing this. This is not because I'm like, I love talking about myself. This is because I had so many messages yesterday from people asking me questions about stuff. And I was like, fucking hell, I just have to go into detail now so that people have an idea of like what to go through. But yeah, so at this point, it's like 2014, 2015, I'm back in Brighton. I'm a bit depressed because I've dropped out of uni, even though I dropped out for the right reasons, because I was very miserable in Bristol and I also didn't like my course. I was in a lot stronger mindset though. My confidence was great. I'd done a lot more things to go out of my comfort zone. For example, the summer just before that, I'd gone to Bestival for the first time, which is a festival on the Isle of Wight. And I did that and I was dreading it because I couldn't ever sleep at night without watching a film. and suddenly I was going to be in a tent for 4 days, just on my own in a field. But actually, that was the best experience for me. And I was dreading that. That was a very spontaneous, like, 3 days before. Yeah, I'll buy a ticket. I'll buy a tent. I'm coming to Bestival with all my mates. I had like 4 or 5 close mates going, but in this group that I was going with, they were all just kind of like acquaintances at the time. So I was a bit nervous. I didn't have my close crew there. But I got there, and I remember beforehand, my mum was like, if you don't like it, because if you're going to struggle, you're not trapped for 4 days, you can call me and I can just make an excuse up that like something's wrong at home and you've got to come home, and then your friends aren't going to judge you. So basically I established a backup plan. That's quite an important thing to remember, because this is a very crucial piece when suffering with a panic disorder and lots of kind of social anxiety. Some people are like, I don't want to go to the pub because I feel trapped if anything goes wrong. And I think actually if you establish an escape plan, like worst comes to worst, you can pretend you've got a phone call from your mum and something's happened and you have to leave. It's not a big deal. No one's going to judge you and you've got a get out card. If you know as you're going into the pub that you've got a backup plan, 9 times out of 10, you're never going to fucking use that backup plan because you know it's there in the back of your head if you need it. Anyway, bit of advice. So yeah, went to Bestival, had the greatest time, managed to sleep well every night without the TV on because obviously I was in a tent and in a field. Made some amazing new friends, had some great experiences. My confidence like went massively up. Like I felt fucking incredible. I was surrounded by great people, great friends. I wasn't doing drugs because I don't do drugs. I was just drinking and obviously smoking cigarettes, etc. But yeah, I had a great time. So yeah, so to kind of, that was that. And again, that kind of goes back to the whole Xanti experience. Like I took myself out of my now, of my present. I took myself out into a new environment, a new zone. I broke through that comfort zone. It wasn't, and there's a correlation as you can tell, like, because before Bestival, I was shitting myself. I was like, I can't do this. I was panicking the night before, but it turned out to be like the best 4 days of my life to this day in terms of how much I improved as a person. I remember I came back like, honestly, the before and after of me going away for those 4 days was shockingly, shockingly different. Like the contrast was unbelievable. I left a boy and came back a man, essentially. The amount I grew in those 4 days is fucking, I mean, I just can't even articulate how different I became. And the correlation is that how much I was dreading it. And a lot of the time, our anxiety controls our decision-making in life. And we'll be like, I'm not doing that. I feel uncomfortable. But do you really feel uncomfortable? Or is it your anxiety telling you you feel uncomfortable? Sometimes the best thing to do is just say, fuck it, I'm doing it. And just break through it and challenge yourself. And do you know what? If you don't like it, you don't like it. But at least try it every time. And that's been another thing that's changed my life. And I think best will help because that was exactly that. I tried it, was dreading it. There was no, I had no positive inkling it was going to be good. Beforehand, I don't even know why I was going. I tried to sell my ticket just before. I was like, no, I can't do this. But I did it, and it was a great thing to do. So yeah, I can't express that enough. That was a really important thing for me in my life. 1 second. But yeah, so anyway, 2015, I drop out of uni back in Brighton. I'm working at H&M, I'm doing some fashion retail stuff, like 20 hours a week. Tried to get a job in the music industry, didn't get one, was very depressed, emailed about 50 million employers, didn't have any response. So I just started a record label. Don't know how, don't know why. I was like, yep, I like UK garage, I like bass music. There's a lot of that in Bristol. There's none in Brighton anymore. So I'm going to start a label. And yeah, 5 years later, that label was still going strong and it's pretty much built my entire career. But I think I wanted to mention that because it's funny how a lot of my positive things in life are all built from a base of mental health and like depression or anxiety. So me going to Bestival, best 4 days of my life was a sort of springboard from a panic disorder and a sort of depression era. Xanti was definitely like a panic disorder springboard. And then looking at like, you know, starting this record label, that was especially like, I was very depressed. I was a dropout. I had no self-worth. I didn't know what to do with myself, and that label really helped me become who I am now. And then, so that was a great time. And I moved out in Brighton with some of my best mates. And it was just like a great time. And I went back to uni in Brighton, which was perfect because I had my mates here, had my uni mates. I lived two roads from my uni. Like I lived in town, like the center of Brighton. Like my confidence was sky high. The label was doing bits, like things were good. I was getting more confidence with girls and I was like having more healthy relationships with women. I did go through a lot of heartbreak though in those kind of like 2-3 years after that. I'm not really going to go into too much detail. I just think for the sake of, I'm not here to badmouth any person that I've been with romantically. I just can't be bothered to do that really. I just don't think it's fair. But yeah, I had a real like tough time with relationships and with girls, and that was real challenging actually. But apart from that, life was good at this point. But I started to have more therapy, and this time I kind of really started to analyze my childhood, and we started to bring up these dreams and bring up that primary school that I was talking about at the start of this episode, and I started to really uncover where my fear came from. And a lot of episodes that I had in school where I felt quite cut off from my friends and stuff. Like, and I used to like run home and play online games to escape the world. All these incidents have a correlation between like the school that I was at and then my experiences moving forward. And then obviously getting robbed and my health anxiety issues and stuff like that. It's just all kind of mad because there's always a trigger there. I think what happens in life is that us who suffer, we never really understand what our triggers are. It takes us a long time to like piece that together. But yeah, I think I kind of worked out how to piece it together as time went on, but I'm still suffering now. I said that yesterday in the first episode, like I still struggle with my mental health. It's not like something which is easy to deal with. There's no cure. I've never taken medication. But don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with taking medication. If you need medication, you should take medication. I definitely think looking back, I'll be honest with you, when I went through that 2012 2-month period of time where I was fucking trying to kill myself every day, not going to lie, that was every day I was just like, I think it would be easier if I was just dead. Like, I wish someone could just kill me and just end it, please. Please just stop this happening. I can't live my life. It was a fucking shocking time. Very emotional as well, because again, I was open with my friends, but I couldn't even articulate what I was feeling like. I just didn't understand. The stigma was so bad back then. It was just not the one. My mates were sort of, I almost felt like if I was open too much with my mates, they would just get bored of my shit. So instead, I was just sitting in my room Googling like, I hate my life. Like that was, I remember it, just Googling in my room. I was so depressed. Oh my God. Like, but anyway, the point is there and then medication probably would have really helped me. I think medication is great from getting you to a point of, I guess, no return where you can't really, it's very hard to break out of. The fact I broke out of it was probably due to going on holiday with my 14 mates. That was probably a massive help. But to be honest with you, like, yeah, I guess like in theory, like I came out quite a little bit stronger because I had to deal with these things without any assistance, and just incorporating good thinking and positive mental attitude and just mindfulness techniques, I guess. But medication is not a bad thing. But yeah, to kind of explain what I'm saying, I've never taken medication, but I'm, you know, and I've done it all naturally, I guess, in terms of like doing stuff on my own and just using my mind and trying to like rewire my brain and my thinking. But I still struggle. I still suffer on a daily basis with different issues. And definitely at the moment, I'm in a very weird predicament. Like I've got big issues with like validation. Life's really good in terms of what I'm doing, but I'm not very happy at the moment. I'm very miserable. I feel quite sad. You know, I still cry quite a bit, to be honest with you. Like I have these moments where I sort of break down and it's really difficult. Like it's not a nice experience. I've got great mates, but I get really paranoid. I'm always like, oh my God, do they not like me at the moment? Like they haven't messaged me in a while. Maybe they don't like me. Like they haven't replied to me in the group chat. Like what's going on? And I really struggle, and I see other people doing really well, and I get quite jealous and quite envious. And I've definitely got something going on right now, which I can't really put my finger on, but I'm trying to work through it. I think it's just about working through your problems. We're always going to face these issues in our life. Like, humans need to have anxiety in them to survive. Like, it's the fight or flight, which I will get into some more detail at some point as time goes on. But, you know, there's a big thing that happens to us, and we have to kind of, it's not easy. Like, there's no real way to tackle it. It's all what works for you. But yeah, right now I'm experiencing a lot of discomfort, and it's very difficult. And this podcast has been a real blessing to kind of be open about that. But definitely, like, my relationship with women as well. Like, I just crave female company so much. I'm kind of craving, like, intimacy. And I know that's just down to the fact that I'm not really loving myself right now. So I'm almost hoping that someone else could love me. And that's what I'm starting to do. And to counter that now, I'm now trying to just, like, now retarget my energy and just start putting it back into myself. I'm just trying to give me some self-love. Going to get my first haircut since quarantine tomorrow. I've been working out every morning. Like, that's been great for me. I can see my body starting to take shape again, just like when I was going to the gym before quarantine. And I've, like, stopped texting girls, which is hard. Like, that's quite tough for me. Like, I always feel like I need to be texting someone, which I think a lot of humans do. And, like, you know, we're all culprits of that. Like, we've all been there. But I'm just trying to kind of slow that down as well, because I'm just like, well, it's probably not that healthy for me right now to have that. I probably need to put time into myself before anyone else. I'm just trying to spend time with people that mean a lot to me and don't cause me any toxicity. So I'm just seeing, like, close friends who I adore, and that's been really nice. I'm just trying to spend more time away from alcohol and just on my own, which is hard though. It's not easy. It's so easy to go to the fucking pub with your mate. Like, you know, it's easy to go for a drink and then you have a couple pints and you feel really positive because it's that fake stimulus of the alcohol or stimuli. Sorry. But that kind of, you know, it brings your serotonin levels, the chemical in your brain, it brings it up and it's like, oh, great, I'm so happy. You have a pint and you get that sort of buzz feeling in your chest and it rises up. It's almost like you're coming up and you're like, oh, I feel really great. Oh, I love having a drink with my friend. But actually, like, that's going to drop even lower once you sober up. Like, your serotonin levels are going to drop lower to try and replenish what's been lost. And, but again, it's so easy to go for a pint with a mate. It's not easy to go sit on the beach on your own and read a book compared to that, you know? Like, I find it really difficult. It's not easy to go sit down on your own somewhere and just sit with yourself or just sit at home on your own. But it's easy to meet a couple mates in the local and have a laugh and have a few drinks. I mean, yeah, you can go have a soft drink, so that's great. But I mean, you see what I'm trying to say here? Like, it's easy to, like, go and use alcohol as a way of dealing with it. And I'm so guilty of that myself still. I had a few drinks last night. I had 3 drinks last night. And that was not part of the plan. But it happened and I felt really good. But actually, I got into bed and I was like, oh, fucking hell, I don't feel that great. Like, why did I do that? But it was a nice experience. I had a good chat with some friends, so it was good. But anyway, I'm probably going to wrap it up around here. I don't know. Anything else to discuss? Let me think. Dun, 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 dun. Haven't written anything down. I'm just literally staring into the white wall behind my mic booth. But yeah, okay. I think that's it, really. Again, this is episode 1.5. This is a bit of a tag on or an add-on, actually, should we say. An add-on to episode 1 because of the questions I received yesterday and today. And I was like, I can't. I think I just need to do an episode, like, another thing to address these things before I kind of move forward with dealing with other guests. And that wasn't part of the plan at first, but I guess now it is. So anyway, what else? Quick one. Quick. What else? Before I wrap this up, because I want to do it all in one take, so I can't really stop it and just have a proper think. I have to think on the spot. But no, I think we've covered everything now. It's all important. I guess keep your questions coming, and anyone else who wants to ask anything, just hit me up as well on Instagram. I'm not looking to set up any social media accounts just yet for this particular series. But I'd love to one day. I was actually having a chat with someone yesterday about, like, eventually doing merch and eventually, like, trying to really build, like, a well-being community. There's a profile I follow on Instagram, which I recommend everyone to check out right now. Let me just quickly get it up. It's called, what's it called? I think it's called like Depression Project, and it's like, yeah, Real Depression Project, all one word, right? Instagram. And it's like a mental health service, and honestly, it's fucking fantastic. It's got some of the best carousels for mental health related information. And I'm really inspired by that. I would love to look at doing stuff like that on a sort of my first panic attack Instagram account one day, and like sell merch with the two love hearts and do stuff like that. I don't know. I just feel like it will be a great thing to do one day. But yeah, we'll see about that. We'll just see how things unfold. I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but I'm very excited to see where this goes. Like, I can't stop thinking about it. And I've got shit to do as well. I've got a fucking business to run. I'm trying to do all that stuff, but I keep thinking about the podcast. I'm just like, oh, because I've locked in all these guests, and I'm just getting all my calendar synced up, and I'm just like, fucking hell, I need to like slow down a bit. I can't do this too much right now because there is a lot that needs to be done. But yeah, if anyone's got any other questions, you know, do kind of hit me up. I've been through a fair few things, like everyone has though. I shouldn't be seen as different. I should be seen as a normal average person from my experiences, because everyone really in this world should have the same amount of experiences like I have. Maybe a little bit less, maybe a little bit more sometimes, but the point is, we shouldn't have to believe that having a few experiences makes us different. We should all feel very united, because all of us have gone through different problems in our lives, and that's very important to remember. You know, especially now more than ever before. But again, I'm going to leave it there. Thanks for listening. And any more questions, send them through. But again, this is 1.5, which I think is quite a fitting title. And if you think that's a good system, let me know, because I think like some episodes will be quite heavy, right? Where I'll chat to someone about something quite personal, and we might run out of time and to touch upon some like follow-up stuff. So I think I'll use like a 0.5 formula to follow up on anything that's been missed out in that particular episode. Let's say episode 4, I've got a guest talking about a loss of a parent, and we don't get to really kind of sort of finalize how they're feeling now, for example. Maybe like that 0.5, like 4.5 will be a kind of things that we can do to kind of deal with that grief and deal with that kind of acceptance and coping. But I'm not too sure, because I know I'm not a trained therapist or counselor. I'm very particular about wanting to give out advice. So I will have to just mention again, everything I've said today, like, please understand I'm not a counselor or a therapist. I'm just trying to have a conversation with you and just talk to you on a level and just make you feel comfortable with what's going on, because that's just what I'm trying to do. Like, I like talking. I talk too much as well. People get pissed off at me all the time. So now I have an actual outlet to do that, and it's about mental health. I mean, I can't really complain. So that's that. But yeah, okay, cool. Anything else, let me know. And for now, I'm going to leave it there. But yeah, lots of love, gang, and see you all soon. And I hope this has been educational. Cool. Bye.